All right, we're starting here on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the Mishnah that we saw yesterday and says, Hayu Shneim Shel Ish Echad. If both the Shvarim that we're chasing down this other shore belong to a single owner, a single individual, Shneim Chayavim. They're both responsible for the damage. So Amalei Rova Meparzika, the Rav Ashi, Shvamina. From this you would conclude, Shvarim Tamim Sheziku. If you have Shvarim that are Tamim, that did damage, Ratzami Zegova, he can choose which one of the animals, or which one of the Shvarim that he wants to go after in order to collect. Now Rashi says over here, V'im avad achad, kam chaveiro bimkomo. If one of them is lost, the other one can replace it. Umishtalei memenu, he can pay out of it. As if he has some sort of backup or insurance here, that if one of these shvarim is lost, then the other one backs up and he can collect out of that shore. Remember, we're talking about a shore tam that is collected migufo. So here, because we're uncertain as to which one of the two did the damage, if both of them are encumbered to the payment of the damage, and he's allowed to collect from one or the other. Now that's where Rashi learns. The Balei Tosafot have great difficulty with this because of the problem of why. If only one of them damaged, why does he have a right to collect from both of them? So the Tosafot suggest over here that they're talking about a scenario or a case that's not really mentioned in our Mishnah, but rather a case where both of them did damage. And in a case where both of them did damage, he has a right to go after both of them in order to get the money. And we view the two shvarim as if they are one unit or one entity. We don't look at which or how much damage was done by each of them, but the fact that they were both participants in the damage that was done, they both become now the possible collections for him. So that's the way that the Balei Tosafot learned that it's a case that's not really mentioned in the Mishnah, but is derived from the scenario in the Mishnah, which is here you have two shvarim that actually did damage, as opposed to the Mishnah where it's only one shore. But the Gemara is concluding from that you can go after either one of them. Perhaps she takes it literally that it's the case in the Mishnah and that you have a right to choose which shore you go after. Where it says, Achim Ma'eskinon, what are we talking about here? Bimuadin. We're not talking about a shore tam, but rather we're talking about a mu'ad. And for that reason, he's able to go after whatever he wants because the individual is culpable for all of the payment over here. The shvarim just serve as a backstop, but not as the cap or the full payment of the liability over here. Where it says, Ibn Muaddin, if we're talking about Muaddin, Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the Seifa of the Mishnah, which is the next case in the Mishnah? Haya echad gadol v'echad katan. One of the animals was large, one of them was small. Hanizak omer, the one who was damaged says, Gadol Ezik, it was the larger of the two animals that did the damage. Vamazik omer lo, Eliki katan Ezik. And the person who owns the shvarim that did the damage, so it was the smaller one that did the damage. Hamotzi michavero alav araya. The burden of proof is on the one who wants to extract money here, meaning that the Nizak, who's trying to make the claim against the larger animal, he's got to prove that it was the larger animal. Ibn Muaddin, if we're talking about a case here that we're talking about shvarim that are Muaddin, my nafkale mina. What is the difference? What difference does it make if it's the big one or the small one? In the end, the individual himself is on the hook for the liability. Sof-sof, demei Torah ma'alya by lishlume. In the end, the owner is going to have to pay him whatever damage was done, irrespective of whether it was the larger or the smaller shore that did damage. Ella, seifa b'tamin, v'resha b'muadin. It must be that the Seifa is talking about a case of Tamin, that we already proved, because otherwise you wouldn't have to make a differential between a Gadol and a Katan. The only reason a Gadol and Katan have meaning is in a case of a Tam, where you mishalem migufo, and that's why the Nizak is arguing it's the Gadol, and the Mazik is arguing it's the Katan. On the other hand, in the case of the Reisha, quote-unquote, or in the case beforehand, where we said Shnehem Chayavim, we make them both liable, over there we thought maybe it's because they were Tamim, and then they are jointly liable for the damage, whether that's according to Rashi as a backstop or for Tosafot that they're both participants in the damage. Gemara said, no, that's not about Muaddin. The reason they're both on the hook or both are going to be liable for the payment here is because the individual is completely liable for the damage because they are Muaddin. And so the Gemara comes up. Now we have a scenario where the Mishnah is talking about different cases. In the case of Shneim Chayvim, it's talking about Muaddin. In the case of Echad Gadol v'Echad Katan, it's talking about Tamim. So I'm going to say, Ravach HaSav al-Ravashi, Ibi Muaddin, Chayavin doesn't make so much sense. The wording of the Mishnah is not proper. If you say they're speaking about Muaddin, it shouldn't be that they are Chayavin, that the animals are the responsible, quote-unquote, parties for the damage that's done here. Chayav Gavra Mibaile. The chiyuv is on the owner, on the person who owns them, because that's where the ultimate liability sits. As opposed to by a tam, where the liability really does sit with the animal. The here, if you're talking about a muad, the liability ultimate sits with the owner of the animals. And so why are you saying chayavin shnehem, referring to the animals themselves? Vitu, my shnehem. And then why both of them? Why is it relevant at all that you have two of them? If there's one, two, five, if nothing makes a difference here, because if it's a muad that did the damage, then the person is chayav for it. The number of animals is irrelevant. So ella deolam bitamin. That we're talking about here, a case where it's tamin, meaning that we're going to be consistent in the Mishnah. And both cases are speaking about a case of a tam. V'Rabbi Akiva hi. And it's according to Rabbi Akiva, damar shutafin ninhu. It's according to Rabbi Akiva, who believes that when a tam does damage, then the owner of the animal that was damaged becomes a partner in the tam because of his right to collect out of the goof of the tam. Remember, there was a machloket that we saw between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel believes that you have an outstanding credit. You are a creditor of the individual who did the damage, and that is backed up by, or there's a lien on the animal to make that payment. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says no, that you really have literal ownership in the animal for the payment of the nezek that was done to you. V'tayma di'itnehu l'tarvayu. And the reason he gets paid here is because both of the animals are present. Tolo matzi midachile. Because then the individual or the owner can't say to him, well, I only have one of the two animals that was there in that altercation, and maybe this wasn't the animal that did the damage. And the animal that got lost was the one that had the one that you're a partner in, and you've lost out on your money. In a case where they're not both present, go bring a proof that this is the shore that did the damage, and I'll pay you for it. But maybe your shore is the one that took off, that's not here anymore, and you've lost out. You have nothing to collect from. So based on that, we're going to say now that the whole Mishnah is talking about Tam. The second case in the Mishnah, which is Echad Gadol Echad Katan, makes sense now, because that's why it makes the difference whether it's a Gadol or a Katan, because they are Tamim. The case before, we say Shneim Chavim, we're also talking about a Tam, but the reason that you need both of them here, not Shneim Chayavim to your advantage, to say that both of them are on the hook for your payment, but rather, Shneim Chayavim is the only case where you're going to get paid out, is when they're both present, because in that case, the Mazik has no claim or no way to push you away and to say that you don't have a claim over here, because both animals are present and you have a right or an ownership in these two animals, one of the two at least, who did the damage. Whereas if one of them was missing, he could start saying to you, listen, the animal's not here anymore. That was your animal. That's the one you own 50% of now. And you're out of luck. It's not here anymore. So that's the way that the Gemara concludes. Rashi makes a comment on this conclusion of the Gemara and says, Aval the Rabbi Ishmael, Kevin Damar Balchovu, according to Rabbi Ishmael, says that you are a creditor against the person who did damage. If one of the animals is lost, you do not lose your rights. Meaning that since you are a creditor and the animal just serves as collateral for that loan, if the animal's lost, that's all that's lost, is the collateral. But the outstanding obligation still exists. So according to Rashi, the Gemara says it's only true according to Rabbi Akiva, this din. According to Rabbi Yishmael, this din would not be true, because according to Rabbi Yishmael, whether two animals are present or one animal is present, you'll be able to collect, because the presence of the animals is not what determines whether you can collect the money or not. You collect the money because you're a creditor over here. The Balei HaTosafot argue on Rashi and say just the opposite. Their main claim against Rashi is that when you have a putuki, when you have directed collateral, like in this instance, where the animal itself is the directed collateral for the repayment of the loan, if the directed collateral is lost, you are out of luck and you will not get paid back. And therefore, the Balei HaTosafot say that according to Rabbi Yishmael, for sure, for certain, if one of the animals is lost, you're not getting paid, because he says that that's an aputuki, it's a directed collateral for your loan. If the animal's gone, it's obvious that you're not going to get paid out over here. On the other hand, the chiddush of the Gemara is that even according to Rabbi Akiva, if one of the animals is missing, you won't get paid out. Because you would have thought, or you could have had the following havamina, which is that according to Rabbi Akiva, the nizak can say to the mazik, listen, you prove to me that I don't own a chelek in the animal that's here. just as much as the Mazik can say to the Nizak, how do you know that you own the animal that's here? Maybe your animal is the one that got lost. The Nizak himself can say the same thing back to the Mazik and say, listen, I own half of this animal. And if you don't think so, prove to me that I don't own half of this animal. And the one that got lost was the one that I owned half of. So they both have a claim here, which gives them a certain amount of rights or makes them the Mukhzak in this situation. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, I would have had a Hava Mino that maybe the Nizak has a strong enough claim to, even in the case where there's one animal, to still collect, or at least put the burden of proof on the Mazik. The answer of the Gemara is, in the end, that that's not the case. And that when one of them is missing, the Mazik still has the upper hand, and a Motsimi Chavero Alav Araya applies to the Nizak, and the Nizak is going to have to bring proof that his half-owned animal is the one that remains, and not the one that took off. So, all right. So in the case of Muad, you're right, because in the case of Muad, there's the obligation rests with the person themselves. On the other hand, in the case of Tom, the animal itself becomes the form of payment or method of payment. And so for Bali HaTosafot, they take that very literally, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, and it's an aputuki. That means that it's directed collateral, and that is going to be designated or considered the means of payment. And if that means of payment disappears, then you've lost the ability to collect because your means of payment is no longer around. It disappeared. For Rabbi Akiva, according to Rashi, that will also be the case where if you are a shared owner in it and you have a partial ownership, and that's what the form of payment is, when your part ownership is lost, then you're not going to get paid here. So that's the reason by Tom that, according to Rashi or the Tosafot, depending if you think it's Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Shmuel, that Tom has a different din than Muad. Tom, your form of payment is the animal. And if that form of payment, or if that payment itself is lost, you're not going to get paid out because the owner's liability is capped out by the short itself. And that liability or the means of payment is the short itself. And so it's as if the item that you were entitled to got lost, and therefore you're not going to get paid. That we end the third perek. Adran alach haminiach. Right now we begin the fourth perek, which is shor shenagach arba'a v'chamisha shvarim. There was a shor that gored four or five different oxen, ze achar ze, one after the next. Yishalem la'acharon shebehem. He's going to pay the last of the ones there. V'yem yesh bo mutar, if there is extra left over, meaning if there is still money left over after he's paid the last one, yachzir l'shefanav, then he will use that excess to pay back the damage that was done to the one in the preceding incident. V'im yesh bo mutar, if there's sufficient to cover the damage to the last party and the one before him, then yechzir l'shefnei fanav, then you go back to the third to last individual. V'acharon, acharon niskar. The last party is the beneficiary, meaning that he gets the biggest of the payments, and everybody else gets a waterfall after him. So when he's done getting paid, whatever's left over will go to the next, and then so on and so forth, it'll waterfall down through till you get back to the original shore that was damaged. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Okay, very good. So Rashi asks your question right away and says, how do you have a shore that gored four or five times and still considered to be a tam? What's very clear here from the Mishnah is that we're talking about a shore tam. That's Mishtalemi Gufo, which is paying out of its goof because there's a capped out liability over here. Because if it was a muad and the owner was responsible and there was unlimited liability, then why would it matter that you pay the last one and then it rolls back to the one before him and the one before him? None of that would be relevant. This is only relevant when we're talking about a short time where there's a cap in the liability. The individual, the owner, is not going to be chayav for more than the value of the short. And in that case, the last party to get damaged goes and collects, and whatever's left over goes to the one before and the one before. And therefore, we must be talking about a short tom. But how do you have a short tom that gored four or five times? So Rashi says that it is a shore that has a lot of inconsistency in its goring. The way to become a muad is when you have a consistent pattern of behavior. So a shore that gores three times in a row, that's a shore muad because it's consistent. A shore that gores once, doesn't gore the next time, then gores the third time, doesn't gore the fourth time, but does gore the fifth time. That's what we call a pattern of the Sirugin. Alternately, every second animal that it sees, it gores. That's also a consistent pattern by which you'll be deemed a muad. What Rashi suggests over here is that this Shore is extremely inconsistent in its behavior. Therefore, it gored an animal. Then the next one it saw didn't gore. It gored a third animal, and then it skipped two animals. And then it gored the sixth animal. So there's no pattern in terms of a consistent pattern of sequence, one after the next. As well as there's no alternating sequence here that gives you or makes them into a Shor Muad. So that's the approach Rashi takes to say that it's not a Shor Muad here is because of the lack of consistency in this Shor's behavior. And therefore, he will never become a Shor Muad. What we're trying to separate is between erratic behavior and consistent problematic behavior. So if it shows patterns, then it's consistently problematic, and we know it's a Shor Muad. It's a Shor that will do damage when it's put in these circumstances. On the other hand, if you have erratic behavior, then this is not a Shor that's necessarily a Muad. It's an erratic type of Shor that might require Shmirah for a different reason because of the nature, its erratic nature, but it's not certain that this Shor is going to do damage every time it comes into a situation or it's met with other animals or with human beings, because its behavior is erratic. Now, obviously, if it's dangerous in being erratic, then that'd be a separate issue. But over here, it's just completely inconsistent, which proves to us nothing about its behavior. We're going to see that it's errant behavior rather than consistent behavior, and we're not going to deem it as a muat. All right, that's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is a case where they didn't have time to get the bait in. It's a case where it gored in a number of times, and assuming that, based on the machloket that we saw earlier in the Masechta as to how a Shor becomes Muad, in that case, then if they didn't get him to Beitin yet, there's a possibility he's still a Shor Tam, even though he's gored a number of times. But for whatever reason, he still is a Shor Tam over here, and therefore, we're going to, according to Rabbi Meir, say that the last guy gets paid out, and then we go back through the list until the guys before him or earlier individuals who were damaged get their collection. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says, Shor Sheveh Mataim, Shnagach L'Shor Sheveh Mataim. You have a Shor that's worth 200 that gores one that's worth 200, but any Nevela Yafak Klum, and the carcass is worthless. Zenotel Maneh, Zenotel Maneh. Then the owner gets 100, and the Nizak gets 100 of this Shor that is alive. Chazar V'Nagach, Shor Acher Sheveh Mataim. It goes in and gores another Shor that's worth 200 Zuz. Hacharon, the party that was just damaged, notel maneh. He gets his half damage, which is maneh, 100 zuz. Vishalif panav, zenotel 50 zuz, zenotel 50 zuz. The original owner and the first party that was damaged, they get the residual of the remaining value of the Shor, which is 100 zuz, split between them, which is 50-50. What's clear from Rabbi Shimon is that he holds, like Rabbi Akiva, that you become a shutaf, you become a partner in the animal after you are damaged by the animal. And that's how you're collecting out of this Shor Tam. So your partnership now also comes with benefits, but also it comes with some negatives as well, which is now when the Shor goes out and does damage, you are going to be on the hook for 50% of all damage that's done. And therefore, the new party that's damaged will get his 100 zuz paid out, but you and the original owners are only going to split the 50-50 because you're now joint owners in the Shor. You each own 50% of the Shor. And that Shor that did damage, you are 50% each liable for the damage that's done. So each of you are going to put in half the damage, 50 zuz, and each of you will get back 50 zuz. So then, Chazar V'Nagach Shor Acher Sheveh Mataim. Now does a third time, it damages a Shor that's worth 200. Acharon notel maneh. Once again, the last guy gets his damage paid out of 100. Vilish lefanav. The one before him owns 50% of the Shor. So he's going to get 50% of the residual value of the Shor, which is 100 zuz now. So he'll get 50 zuz. Or you could look at the other way around. He's responsible for 50% of the damage that's done. So out of the 100 that he owns, 50 of it's going to be given into the damage. Ushnaim arishonim, the original owner, as well as the first individual who was damaged, dinar zahav. They will get one golden dinar, which is the equivalent of 25 dinare kesef or 25 zuz. And they'll each get 25 split between them because their ownership in each of these cases is being diluted. So when the first owner who owned 100% of the animal, it damaged, and now he took on a second owner because of that damage, they became 50% partners in the animal. When the animal then subsequently did damage again, then they took on another partner. That partner owns 50%, and the first two individuals own 50% between them, 25% each. If it goes out and does damage again, then the final party is now a 50% owner in it. That's why he'll get his 100 zoos. The remaining 50% belongs to the previous three individuals. And the one who was damaged one before the last will have 50% of that residual. The two before him will have 25% and 25%. And you can go on, so on and so forth. You can keep doing this. And the ownership will continue to be diluted by each damage or incident that takes place. And again, you can look at it one of two ways. That whatever residual value is left, they own that percentage of it. Or they're responsible for that percentage of the damage that's done. And therefore, they're going to lose, out of the 100 zoos they have, they're going to lose 50% of it. And the people before are also going to lose their 25%. So in that way, you will see a dilution of ownership. But they all become joint owners in the animal as it continues to move along or do damage. Now the Gemara asks, Matnitan Mani, who is the author of our Mishnah? Deloka Rabbi Shmuel or Deloka Rabbi Akiva? It's not like Rabbi Shmuel, and it's not like Rabbi Akiva. As in Rabbeinu Hananel notes over here, that both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel were Rebbeim of Rabbi Meir. So the question of who the author of the Mishnah is more pronounced here, since both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are Rebbeim of Rabbi Meir. Who is Rabbi Meir following? Ikar Rabbi Shmuel. If you think he's following Rabbi Shmuel, damar balei chovot ninhu, that they become creditors, meaning that the party that is damaged becomes a creditor, hayacharon acharon niskar, why is the last party the beneficiary over here? Rishon niskar mi balei. Each first party, meaning that the one who has the first claim should be the one that has the strongest claim over here, because he became a creditor first. And when you're the creditor first, you have the first right or first claim on the property. And each subsequent creditor has less of a claim or is behind you in the right to collect. So then why is it the Acharon is the beneficiary? It's the Rishon that should be the beneficiary. Now, even though, if you remember, we said earlier that in an instance where you had a creditor and then the animal went out and did damage, the damaged party has a right to come and collect before the creditor that was there at first. So that means that someone who is a damaged party actually has more power than a creditor, and he can upend the creditor. So why don't you say the same thing over here? Rashi asked that question. Just apply the same principle over here. Each one here who is the last damaged party should be able to upend or erase all the creditors before him. The answer is that that case is different. The case that the Gemara spoke about in the previous parak was a case where you have a regular creditor on the animal, and then there's a party that was damaged. So the party that's damaged can say to the creditor, it doesn't really matter that you're a creditor over here. So what right do you have as a creditor? You can foreclose on this animal? Go ahead and foreclose on the animal. The animal still did damage to me, and I get to collect out of the animal. Doesn't matter to me if you're the owner, or if the original owners are the owner, I'm getting my money. So that's why he's able to trump the creditor. In our instance, all the creditors here are of the same ilk. They're all parties that were damaged. And so they can't say, because Rabbi Shmuel doesn't think you are a partner in the animal, the later creditor can't say about the first creditor, listen, out of my way, because I'm the one who got damaged, and if you have any rights over here, your animal did damage to me. That's not the case, because nobody here really owns the animal. And each of these creditors are on equal footing because they are all from the same source, which is that they got damaged by this animal. And so the later one can't trump necessarily the earlier one. And for that reason, if you held like Rabbi Shmuel, then the first damaged party should have the highest level of rights here, or the highest right of collection. Ikar Rabbi Akiva, if it's Rabbi Akiva, damar Torah deshutvehu, if it's Rabbi Akiva says that each one of them becomes a partner in the animal, hayeshbo mutar yachzir lishafanav, you're telling me if there's excess money left after the last party gets paid out, it goes to the one before them, lukulami violate. It doesn't go to the party before, it goes to all the parties beforehand. It's not just to the single individual who was damaged one before the party that made their final collection. It's every party, as we saw in Rabbi Shimon's Shita, that once the party that's injured last takes his compensation of 100 zuz, then the other 100 zuz is split between all the previous parties. So what are you talking about? It goes to the one before him. It goes to all the parties before him. So Amar Rava, Rava suggests that the Mishnah is Olam ki Rabbi Shmuel. The Mishnah follows the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, Damari Balei Chovot Ninhu. Kashalach, Acharon Acharon Niskar. Rishon Niskar mi Baile. And you had a problem with the Mishnah that said that it's the last party that is the beneficiary and not the earlier parties. And if they're creditors here, they should be the earlier parties that are the beneficiaries. Hachamayaskinan, Kigon Shetafso, Nizak Ligavot Himenu. In all these cases, the damaged party grabbed the animal in order to get his payment. He was to face the animal in order to ensure that he got payment. And for that reason, it becomes like a shomer sachar for any damage that is done, because how does he become a shomer sachar? The animal itself is owned by the Baalim. The individual wants to get paid out of this animal, grabs the animal. The benefit that he has right now is the fact that the animal is in his possession, which ensures that he's going to get paid out on the money that he is owed. That makes him into a shomer sachar, because that hana'ah, that benefit that he has by holding the animal, now makes him into a quote-unquote paid individual, the payment being the hana'ah, or the benefit of the fact that he has a way to collect, but the animal is still not his. The animal belongs to the Baalim, and he is responsible to ensure that the animal stays healthy and is returned to the Baalim in the end, minus the amount of money that he needs to take out of it. That means that he becomes like a shomer sachar, a responsible party for anything that happens. And for that reason, each party then becomes problematic, which is that when the first one grabbed the animal, he becomes a shomer sachar, or in essence, he becomes on hook for all the damage that the animal does after this. So therefore, the next collector who comes and says, your animal damaged my animal, he has rights of collection that precede the other individual, because the other individual is on the hook as a shomer sachar. But it says, Iyachi yeshbo mutar yachzir lishpanav. Then again, that's a problem in the Mishnah, because if you say there's excess ability to pay here, meaning that the animal is worth more than the damage that was done to the last party, then you return that money to the one before him. That's not where it goes. Yachzir the Baalim mi baile. The owner of the animal is still the original owner. And all of these individuals along the line are shomrei sachar, which is that they are hired guards for the animal because of the fact that they were to face it, each one along the way. And for that reason, the animal still belongs to the Baalim. That means if there's any value left over, that goes back to the Baalim, not to these shomrim over here, to these individuals that were to face it, but back to the Baalim. So why is it saying that it drops or waterfalls back through all the parties? If there's any value, it should go back to the Baalim, who are the true owners of this animal. Amar Ravina Hachiktoni. This is what it means. Im yeshbo motar bin zakav. If there's excess left over from the damage, then yachzir l'shefanav. Then it goes to the party that was before him. V'chein kiyata rabbanam Rav Yochanan mishum pshiat shomrim naguba. That it's because of the negligence of the shomrim that is the cause for their liability over here. So now, what ends up happening here, or what the reason for the liability, is because the fact that each one of them is a shomer sachar along the way. The final party that's damaged, he is the victim of all of these parties' negligence for not taking care of the animal. And so therefore, he's going to get paid out for his nezek. Now, if the nezek of the last party is smaller than the nezek of the party before him, then the party before him will collect. So for instance, if the final shore was worth 150, and that was the damage that was done, then that final party is entitled to 75 zuz, 75 shekel, for the damage that was done to him. The party before him had a shore that was worth 200, and therefore he's entitled to 100 zuz of damage. So therefore, his 100 zuz that he's entitled to, out of that 100 zuz, 75 of it he's going to have to pay out to the final party for his negligence here and not taking care of the shore, but there's 25 that's left over that he will be able to keep because of the fact that he's entitled to that money or that payment. He lost a portion of it because of his negligence to the next party that was damaged. So all you have to have, or any scenario in which the later parties have smaller claims of damage than the previous parties, then whatever the excess damage is from the previous parties, they will be able to keep that amount because of the fact that they were posheya and they have to pay the later party, but whatever's left over, the person before them was a posheya and owes them that money. And so for that reason, you could come up with a scenario where the money rolls back through the different shomrim. And that would be the explanation of the Mishnah that it's Rabbi Meir is holding like Rabbi Yishmael. And because he holds like Rabbi Yishmael, there is no ownership or partnership in this animal. There's simply responsibility because you were tofes, because you grabbed it. And when you grabbed it, you became a shomer sachar. That shomer sachar, or that being a shomer sachar, obligates you to take care of the animal. If you fail to do so and it does damage, you're going to be on the hook for that damage. And so therefore, you are going to have to pay the party that was damaged after you. and that'll come out of your pocket. It's going to come out of the damages you would have collected from the owner beforehand. So the owner retains his original 50% ownership. The first party that was damaged, he now has an entitlement of 100 zuz here, but he was posheya, he was negligent in watching it, and therefore that 100 zuz is on the hook for whatever damage is done afterwards. If it's more or equal to the damage that was done to him, he'll have nothing left over. If the damage that's done after him was a smaller amount, then he'll pay that out, and whatever's left over, he'll get to keep of the 100 zuz. So that is the case of the scenario of the ratio. The question is, what does that mean for Rabbi Akiva? Rashi claims over here, V'kasha nukma le Rabbi Meir namika Rabbi Akiva. Why don't you say that the scenario here is that Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Akiva? Ukshetafso nizak. And the same scenario where the nizak grabbed the animal and has the animal in his possession. So Rashi says, Elo le Rabbi Akiva, lama le demit neklau, below tfisa nami have acharon niskar. For Rabbi Akiva, the final party is a beneficiary or gets the most payment here, irrespective of whether the earlier parties were tofes or not tofes the animal. Meaning that your partnership in this animal automatically makes it or makes the scenario that the final party will get the most payout over here. So for Rabbi Akiva, there's no difference between whether you're tofes or not tofes the animal. In either instance, the acharon is niskar. And so for that reason, the Gemara doesn't explain it in the Shita of Rabbi Meir as a case of tofes and using Rabbi Akiva's Shita, but rather it says that it's a case of tofes within the Shita of Rabbi Ishmael. Because there's a chiddush that achron, achron, niskar, whereas by Rabbi Akiva, it's obvious that achron, achron, niskar, and Rabbi Meir doesn't need to tell you that because that's an obvious outcome of Rabbi Akiva's Shita. So what the Balei Tosafot say over here is, v'davko del Rabbi Ishmael hu naseh shomer sachar. Only according to Rabbi Shmuel do they become a Shomer Sachar. But the Rabbi Kiva, Damar, Shutafim Ninu, that you become a partner in this, V'kicheish, V'shibeach, Havi Bershut HaNizak. It happens in the ownership of the party himself. Lo nase Shomer Sachar, Ela Michelko, De'al Kol Echad Chad Mitol, Lishmor Chelko. He doesn't become a Shomer Sachar. He's just responsible because he owns a portion of this animal. So the responsibility doesn't derive from the fact that he's tofes the animal, or he becomes a shomer sachar. His responsibility derives from the fact that he's a partner in the animal. So according to Rashi and Hochanami, if you explain it according to Rabbi Akiva, it would be the same as Rabbi Ishmael. Just there is no chiddush in saying that it's Rabbi Akiva, because of course, acharon niskar, because of the fact that it doesn't matter whether he's tofes or not tofes, the fact is you become a shomer sachar over the animal. The Tosavot, the Baal Tosavot, are reluctant to accept that understanding because they said it's not true. In a case when you're not Tofes, you do not become a Shomer Sachar over the animal. You're responsible for your ownership in the animal. You're not a Shomer Sachar. The only way that you become a Shomer Sachar in the animal is if you actually Tofes, you took possession of the animal. But for Rabbi Ishmael, where you don't own anything in the animal, but you simply have a Shibud, if you're toe-faced the animal, that brings upon you full responsibility, not only for your portion, but for the entirety of the animal. And that's what makes you into a Shomer Sachar over here. And therefore, the Baal Tosafot say that even according to Rabbi Shimon, just like by Rabbi Meir, it's a case of toe-faced. The reason you need to be toe-faced is because that's why he's responsible for guarding his portion of the animal. If he wasn't there and the Baalim have it, and now his portion of the animal does damage, but the Baalim were the ones who had possession of it and could have watched it, and he couldn't get any access to watch it. Why should he be on the hook or responsible for the damage that's done? Well, then if he's to face it, now we understand why he is responsible for the damage, because he's both a partner and he has possession of the animal, and that's why he's responsible for at least his portion of the damage that is done. Rashi claimed over here that according to Rabbi Akiva, it makes no difference whether you're to face the animal or not to face the animal. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, acharon acharon niskar, you're always on the hook. You're always responsible for the animal. Okay, so therefore, according to Rashi, even in the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, you are responsible for both your portion and the portion of the Baalim. Because you are automatically deemed to be a Shomer Sachar because of your ownership. Now then, the Baalei Tosafot say that your obligation to watch the animal is because you're a part owner. That part ownership makes you responsible for your portion of the animal, but not the Baalim's portion of the animal. Because you are just a part owner, not a Shomer Sachar. So that's why Tosafot says in the end, if according to Rabbi Akiva you're to face it, then you become fully responsible, not only for your portion, but the portion of the Baalim. And that's why he says that, therefore, both the case in the beginning here, Rabbi Meir's case, is a case where he's still faced, and according to Rabbi Shimon, it's a case of where the Nizak was still faced the animal, because that makes him responsible for the whole animal, and not just responsible for his portion of the animal. Right, so now the Gemara says, Ihachi, if you say that the Reisha is authored by Rabbi Ishmael, Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah, which we clearly said that Rabbi Shimon's Shita is, Omer, Shor Sheve Mataim, Shnagach Shor Sheve Mataim, Ben HaNevela Yafak Klum, Zeno Telmane, Vezeno Telmane, Chazar Venagach Shor Acher Sheve Mataim, Acharon Notel Mane, Shlevav Zeno Tel Chamishim Zuz, Vezeno Tel Chamishim Zuz, Chazar Venagach Shor Sheve Mataim, Acharon Notel Mane, Shlevav Notel Chamishim Zuz, Ushnaim Rishonim Dinar Zahav. So again, this is just a repeat of the Mishnah, as we discussed in the Mishnah, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, but it's clearly Aliba to Rabbi Akiva, where you're all becoming partners in the animal as you move along, and then there's dilution of ownership as each new partner is brought on. So out on the Rabbi Akiva, it's clear that that's according to the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, Damar Torah de Shutvehu, that the shore is considered to be owned partnership of the individuals here. It says, Reisha Rabbi Shimon was safer Rabbi Akiva. Is that the case then that the Mishnah is Reisha, the beginning, is under the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, meaning Rabbi Meir's Shita is in the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, and the latter half, Rabbi Shimon's Shita, is in the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Samrein? Yes, that's true. That is the case over here. Again, it's easier to say that over here because you have Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon arguing, and they might be arguing exactly along those lines, that Rabbi Meir is arguing within the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel that this is the case, and Rabbi Shimon is saying that the Locha is like Rabbi Akiva. Daha Amalei Shmuel to Rabbi Yehuda, because Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinana, sharp one, Shvok Matnitin, leave the Mishnah, don't try to explain it, but try and follow me. Reisha Rabbi Shmuel, the Seifa Rabbi Akiva. The Reisha is according to Rabbi Shmuel, and the Seifa is according to Rabbi Akiva. Again, this is a recurring refrain throughout this Masechta. I don't know how many times Shmuel said this to Rabbi Yehuda. It might be that he said it once, and the Gemara applies it in numerous cases, or it might be that he said it about multiple Mishnayot within this Masechta, but there is this statement of Shmuel to Rav Yehuda that says that some of the Mishnayot within Baba Kama are inconsistent in their authorship or attribution. So the Gemara notes this in numerous places now, that whenever we find a Mishnah that seems inconsistent, they say, that's what Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, follow me, these Mishnayot are inconsistent, and they have dual authorship or dual attribution in them. And here's another example of that case where Rabbi Shmuel is the author of the Reisha, and Rabbi Akiva is the author of the Seifa. Right, now, the Gemara moves on and says, Tana tamatokei lechaveiro, a person who is tokeya lechaveiro. Rashi here brings two explanations, another place he brings another explanation. One is that he slapped him on the face. The other possibility is that he blew a shofar in his ear. And the last possibility is that he clapped his hands or smashed something near the ear of somebody and caused them to be frightened or hurt their ear in that way. So that's one of those three possibilities. Notein lo sela. The Beit Din will obligate him to pay a sela. Rashi over here claims that the sela is payment for the busha, for the embarrassment that is caused over here. The remaining damage of Nezek, Tsar, Shevet, and Ripoy, all of that will be separate from the sela. On the other hand, the Rambam believes that the knasot that are mentioned here are all incorporating. Meaning that the sela here is paid not only for the boshet, but is also paid for the nezek, tsar, ripoy, and shevet. All of those are included in this sela. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Yossi Aglili Maneh, that you pay out 100 zuz. So now, it'll turn out, and I'll discuss this more as the Gemara moves through, that there is a huge differential between the position of the Tanakama, who says that's a Sela, and Rabbi Yehuda Amar Mishum Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that's a Maneh. So Al Gavra the Taka the Chavre, there was this individual who did this. Shalchei Rav Tuvia Bar Matno the Kameder of Yosef. So Rav Tuvia Bar Matno was trying the case, and then he sent to Rav Yosef, Sela Tzuritnan or Sela Medinatnan. The Sela that is mentioned here in the Mishnah, is that a Sela of Tzuri, or is that a Sela of Medina? Now that is a difference of 8 times the amount, meaning that a Sela Medina is 1/8 of a Sela Tzuri, or as we've said before, a Sela is worth 4 dinar, And those are dinarei kesef, and that's talking about the coins of the Torah, of dinarei kesef or kesef tzuri. The sela medina is worth 1/8 of that amount, or the equivalent of half a dinar. So the question here is, when you brought this penalty up, was the penalty that you're speaking about a sela tzuri, which is equivalent to 4 dinarei kesef, or are we talking about a sela medina, which is a half dinar kesef? So amalei tenitua. It's a mishnah. Our Mishnah, Ushnaim Arishonim, Dinar Zahav. When the Mishnah went through the scenarios in Rabbi Shimon Shita, by which each subsequent party that was damaged takes their 100 zuz, and the remainder is split by the other parties, in the final scenario in the Mishnah, it says that the damaged party gets 100 zuz, the one before him gets 50 zuz, and the original two, the Balim and the first party that was injured, each get Dinar Zahav, which is 25 zuz each. Visalkadatcha Tani Tana Sela Medina. If you think that the Mishnayot deal in Sela Medina, Niflog Vinitne, then they could have gone another iteration of this. The short damages again, and now you have 100 zuz goes to the final party. The one before him gets 50. The party before him gets 25. And the Balim and the original party each get 12 and a half. And you could have expressed a half dinar as a Sela Medina, which is Niflog Vinitne Ad Tresar. Visela. It's 12 zuz plus a sela. Remember, a sela is a half a dinar. So that would be the equivalent of 12 and a half. And as Rashi notes over here, the Tana wouldn't want to go into half coins. He'd only want to express things in full minted coins. And therefore, if you believe it was sela medina, that would give you the ability to express a half a dinar still through a whole coin. But further than that, the Mishnah wouldn't have done, because then he would start having to deal with half coins or things lower than a single or full coin. So Amalei, Tana Kiruchla, Litnei Vilezel? What do you mean? The Tana is just trying to give us an example of what happens down the road. It doesn't need to keep going until it can't go anymore. We would know what would happen in the next case. You don't need to spell it out. He made it clear already what's happening. Just because he didn't go on to the next iteration doesn't prove to you anything about Sela Medina versus Sela Tzuri. So my Havi Allah, what is the din in this case? They tried to resolve it from this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Kochesef Amur B'Torah. Anytime the Torah mentions monetary payments, kesef, it's speaking about kesef tzuri. It's talking about the kesef of tzuri, which was this silver standard that had a certain type of coinage size and minting of coinage. Michel Divrehem, on the other hand, when it's a rabbinic imposition or it's mentioned in the Mishnayot, it's Kesef Medina. It's measured by the Kesef Medina, which again is 1/8 of the Kesef Tzuri. And Rashi notes over here, this Kesef Tzuri is a sela dalda dinar, via dinar mishkalo zahav, and the dinar is weighed in gold. B'chein korin b'Constantina. In Constantine, the Zahav dinar. They call Zahav a dinar. B'hu shnaimu mechsa the mishkal barzel. And it is 2.5 times the weight of barzel. This description of Rashi is also brought by Rashi in Chumash when he discusses the chatzi shekel that is brought, the chumata mishkan, and which is given in each year for the chumata lishka to pay for the korbanot tzibur. Over there, Rashi also gives a similar type of measurement of the coin, which the Ramban, Der Al HaTorah, disagrees with. Later on, the Ramban, in his trip to Eretz Yisrael, when he finally arrives in Eretz Yisrael, he writes back to his family and says that I found the coins here in Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi's description of the weights and sizes is correct, and I was wrong. And based on what he found, or evidence that he found there, he corroborated what Rashi is describing here versus what the Ramban disagreed with in Al HaTorah. So now, a couple of things to discuss. First of all, now that the Gemara has concluded that in Dinei Derabbanan, we're talking about a Sela Medina, that means that in our case over here, the penalty of the Tana Kama is a Sela, which is 1/2 of a dinar. And the Rabbi Yehuda Mishnah Rabbi Yosef Galili says Maneh, which is 100 dinar. That means that the difference between them is 200 times. That is a very, very big or extreme difference between the two parties. One of them thinks you get half a dinar, the other one thinks you get 100 dinar or 200 times that amount. That seems extreme. So there are Rishonim that say in Hanami, but the Rabbeinu Tam already discusses possibility that we're talking about different individuals over here. Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the Sela of the Tanakhama is referencing to an ani, a poor person that was, this happened to, and their embarrassment is this. The 100 zuz is for a wealthier individual or a person higher up in society. That would be the value of the damage that's done to them, which in essence means that they're not arguing in this, in the Mishnah. They're simply talking about different scenarios. One's talking about an ani, one's talking about an ashir. Tosafot is reluctant to accept that because we find in places in Shas, it looks like there is a machloket over here, and not simply that they're talking about different scenarios. But what the Balei Tosafot do in the end, they say, Mikomakom, afa gab de plige, in the end, when there is a machloket here, nevertheless, Metzila Meimar, zed diber bashir, zed diber bani, that they actually were different in their numbers, but there is more than simply the difference in their opinion. There's also a difference in the individual that is being measured over here, like the Rabbeinu Tam. So Enoch Hanami, the Rabbeinu Tam was suggesting that they don't argue. They're simply talking about an ani and ashir. What the Balei Tosafot are willing to say in the end is they do argue, but they are talking about an ani and ashir. And therefore, if it was an ashir for the Tanakhama, it wouldn't be exactly 100 zuz, it'd be some other number. And the other way around, if it was an ani for Rabbi Yehuda, Shem Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, then also for him, the ani would get more than a Sela Medina. So there is some differential between them, but their opinions when they speak in the Mishnah are talking about different individuals. By doing that, you can close the gap or differential between them, which makes it a more reasonable machloket. And that's the way that the Balei HaTosafot explained that difference or extreme difference in the amounts over here. The other thing to discuss is how far-reaching is this statement that anything from the Torah is Kesef Tzuri, and everything from Midivrehem is Kesef Medina. So, at face value, and that's the way if you look in the Rabbeinu Hananel, he says this. He says that anything that's mentioned in the Torah, all of those are Kesef Tzuri. So that goes to all of these dinim or penalties that are mentioned in the Torah. On the other hand, things like the 200 Zuzavek Tuba, or any other imposition that is Midrabanan, like our Mishnah over here of Tokea L'Chaveiro, all of those are Kesef Medina, and he takes it at face value. Whatever they said here by the Gemara, that it's Kesef Midoraita is Kesef Tzuri, Kesef Midrahim is Kesef Medina. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot are unwilling to accept that, and say that this is only a distinction about the word Sela. If Sela is mentioned in the Torah, or Shekel is mentioned in the Torah, the meaning of Sela or Shekel in the Torah is that of Kesef Tzuri. On the other hand, when you're talking about a Sela in the Divrehem, in the Dinei Derabbanan, in the Mishnah, that Sela is a Sela Medina. But otherwise, the Zuz or the Dinarei Kesef that we're speaking about, both Medina Torah or Midrabbanan, both of them are Kesef Tzuri. He says for that reason, a Ktubah of 200 Zuz doesn't mean 200 Zuz of the Medina, but means 200 Dinarei Kesef. Midoraita, because there it's not talking in the word Sela, it's speaking about Dinarim or Zuzim. And there, it both Midoraita or Midrabanan, it's measured by Kesef Tzuri. So Balei HaTosafot limit this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Merav to the Sela, to that one coin. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel sees this as a far-reaching and complete explanation for any monies or currency, minted coins that are spoken about Midrabanan, are Kesef Medina. And all those that are Midoraita are Kesef Tzuri. So now, Amar Lei Ahu Gavra, so this individual said, Ho Paga de Zuzu, says, look, all I'm going to get here for the damage that's done is half a Zuz, which is a Sela Medina. Lo Beina, I don't need it. Nitve Laniim, give it to the poor people, give it to Tztaka. Hadar Amar Lei, Nitvei Nialei, Izel, the Every Bei Nafshai, says, listen, you know what, in the end I changed my mind, give me the money, I'll go get some food, I'll get a little healthy with it, and I'll utilize it myself. Amalei Rav Yosef, Kvar Zachu Be'aniim. The Aniim already took possession of this, and you don't have a right to retract your gift. V'af agav deleka Aniim hacha, even though there's no Ani here that took possession of it, Anan Yad Ani Nein Anan. I am, or we are acting as the Yad of the Aniim, the way that Rashi says it is, that Rav Yosef was the Gabbai Tztaka, and therefore he could act on behalf of the Aniim. Others simply say that because he was in the Beit Din, he was a judge in the Beit Din, he has a right to act on behalf or to protect the Aniim, and therefore he takes possession of it on their behalf, and he can no longer back out of his commitment to give the money to the Aniim. The problem with this is, and the Baal Tosafot already raised this, is that the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, when it darshens the pasuk beficha, it says that when you articulate a neder by your mouth, that refers to tzedakah. That means when you make an oral commitment to give tzedakah, you are responsible to give that tzedakah, and you're on the hook for it, even though there was no kinyan here. So why do you need Rav Yosef and the kinyan here to lock him in? He's locked in because he committed to give the money to the aniyim. So the Baal HaTosafot and the Rif over here both say the same answer, which is that you can only commit something that exists. You cannot commit something that shelo badi olam. Over here, he has a future collection, which is that he has a half zuz that's owed to him for the damage or this tkiyah that was done to him, and he's now committing that to the aniyim. But he doesn't have it in his possession yet. So that will not be governed by beficha, because it's not in your possession. You can't commit something that you don't own already. On the other hand, Rav Yosef's taking possession of it, or kinyan, can overcome that problem, because it's mamash l'shtam. It's while the present of all the parties that are there. Both the person who's supposed to be paying, the recipient, and the new owner are all there. Mamash l'shtam creates a kinyan by which he can shift the ownership to the aniyim. And that's what's happening over here. That's the way that the Baal HaTosafot explain it. Other Rishonim do not agree with the Baal HaTosafot and the Rif, that the reason that you can't do this here is because it's a Devar Shabolo Lo Baal Olam, but rather the Rabbeinu Hanano suggests it's a case where it's already committed to the other party, but he is not trying to back out of it. But rather, the Rabbeinu Hananel suggests is that he wants to take it for himself first, use it for himself, and then he'll pay the aniyim back. What Rabbi Yosef says is, too bad, you can't do that anymore. I already took possession of the aniyim. You can't take the money, use it yourself, and then pay out your commitment later. So that's what the Rabbeinu Hananel suggests is, yes, he was committed because of beficha. But beficha allows him to pay it later. What Rabbi Yosef's kinyan did was force him to give the money now and not wait till later to make that payment. In the Shutta Rashba, he notes that from here you can prove that Amirato the Gvoa is not Kimisirato the Hejriot by Staka, that we don't make such a statement or we don't hold of that Beficha in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and then you'll have to reconcile with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and what it says there. But the Rashba says you prove from here that that's just not the case. When you make an oral commitment, that it doesn't bind you in this case. Dam Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, because we have a similar scenario of Yitomim, Enan Tzrichim Puzbol. Orphans do not require a Puzbol to protect their outstanding loans when it comes to Shemitah Ksafim. V'chein Tami Rami Bar Chama, Yitomim Enan Tzrichim Puzbol. They don't need a Puzbol. Rabbi Gamliel, Beit Dino, Aviem She Yitomim Hayu. Because they, Beit Din is the father of the Yitomim. They are responsible for the Yitomim. Now, picks, as Rashi says here, Rabbi Gamliel or Beit Dino, because they were a Beit Din Choshuv, and Rabbi Gamliel was the Nosi. It's just pointing out that the Beit Din itself is considered or classified as the father of Yitomim, and therefore they will always act in the best interest of the Yitomim. And that means that we view it as if collected. We view it as if the reason that you do it proves both to give over your loans to the Beit Din. So Beit Din will automatically do that for the Yitomim because they are the protectors of the Yitomim. They are the responsible parties for the Yitomim. Tosafot says, what about the fact that you might have instances where it's an oral loan? Tosafot says the same thing will happen there. Beit Din will act on behalf of these Yitomim to say that they'll grant them property in order to have a Puzbol. They'll do whatever it takes to get them to a position where they're able to collect the money or the loan. Chanan Bisha, Tokale Lahau Gavra. Chanan, the bad one, and we'll see in a second why he's called Chanan Bisha, is that he did this tkiyah in someone's ear. Ata the kamei de Rav Huna, he brought before Rav Huna to adjudicate the case. Amalei zil, havalei pala de zuza. Go give him a sela medina, half a zuz. Havalei zuza, mako. He had a bad quality zuz. By the mitvalei, minei pala de zuza. He wanted to give, out of that coin, half a zuz. Lava mishtakole. There was nobody who was willing to change the coin for him. They didn't think it was worth its full value. It was worn down. It wasn't good enough quality or minted coin. And there were nobody willing to give him change or to split it into two half zuz. So what he did was, tukale achrina. He did another smash on the other side. And vayav yanehale. And then he gave him the full zuz, because now he owed him a full zuz and he didn't have to get change anymore. He gave him the whole thing. Obviously, that's why he's known as Hanan Bisha, because to solve the problem, he did the same avera, or bad behavior, again, in order that he didn't have to get change for the coin, and he could pay the guy the full zuz and be done with this situation. But again, here, from all these cases, you see that we're talking about a sela medina, and we're talking about 1/8 of a sela tsuri, which means that you're dealing with a half dinar, and that's what was brought up in all these examples that we just saw over here. And we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.